budgeted component of the cost base, and funding for statewide initiatives. I think it's important to keep this in mind. At the point that this price list is put together, the funding for statewide initiatives, which otherwise known as policy option packages in the Ways and Means process, at that point, all of the policy option packages that the agency proposes to the governor are included in the price base for these charges. Over time, of course, what happens is through the governor's recommended process, some of those initiatives drop out, other adjustments are made, and then through the process of adopting a legislative budget, some other things drop out, other things are added, so it's constantly moving from virtually the day that it's put together. It's a point-in-time document, I guess, really is the point. And it's a point-in-time document that is really developed about a year in advance of the governor's recommended budget. So we'll begin working on the price list of goods and services for the 07-09 biennium this August. So it's out there a ways. It's nearly 2 years out from the point at which the legislature adopts a budget. And if you want to put it even in further time perspective, it's about 4 years out from the last day that prices will be used in the biennial budget. So you can see this is a document that gets prepared way out in time and necessarily changes over time. Pardon me. The way we put the price list together is we begin by estimating the underlying cost for each of these charges that you see broken up here in the price list. And we do that by looking at the base budget for the program. We look at adjustments to that base. We add debt service. And if the program has policy option packages that are being proposed, we also add the estimated cost of those policy option packages. That base cost data is put into the chargeback model for that program, and that's where we come to assessments or fees for services. Depending on how the program charges back to state agencies, it'll either be an assessment or it will be a fee for service. And so the basic cost data is put into one of those models, and it generates a rate, which is used in the budget preparation process, and really from that point forward, it begins to change. It begins to move around. One of the most common questions is how do we determine whether it is whether the chargeback model that's used is a fee-for-service model or whether it's an assessment model. And I wish that I could sit here and tell you that there's a hard and fast rule that that always works. Generally speaking, that what fee-for-service chargeback models are used where the cost of providing the service tends to fluctuate with customer utilization. Assessment models are used where either we are unable to really accurately affix a cost per unit to the service, and it doesn't fluctuate with utilization. To give you an example of one of those assessments, the DAS director's office. The DAS director's office is used by all agencies of state government. We don't bill agencies on a billable hour basis when they call Lori Warner and say, hey, I need some advice about this, or I've got a problem, I need your help on it. We don't start the clock running and bill them on a billable hour basis. Agencies are assessed proportionally. Generally, those assessments are based on agency FTE. Not always the case, but generally that's the case. And the cost of the DAS director's office, as an example, is shared by all agencies based on their size, fundamentally, under the assumption that all agencies will use the DAS director's office from one time to another, and it's virtually impossible to predict how often an agency will need to use the DAS director's office. Another commonly asked question is, well, you publish these rates, and then what happens if you charge too much? what happens if you start to accrue more money in revenue than it actually costs you to operate the service? A number of things can happen. One is we can simply reduce the rate when we see at points in the biennium. We are constantly watching our revenue stream, and we can determine whether or not we're accruing too much cash based on the rate structure, and we can in fact reduce the rate to state agencies to bring that back into line with actual cost by the end of the biennium. And in fact, we've done that. In effect, we could theoretically accrue a lot more cash than it costs us to operate the service. The check on that, which I'm sure y'all are interested in, the check on that is the legislative expenditure limitation. We can accrue all the cash in the world, but unless you give us the authority to spend it, we can't spend it on anything. There are two problems that are created if we accrue too much cash, and the reason that we watch it fairly closely to try to make sure we don't is if we accrue too much cash, we just disproportionately charge federally funded agencies for the cost of the service. That is, we charge them more than the service actually costs. Our federal partners take a very dim view of paying federal funds for more than what the service costs. And in fact, they come back and they collect all that money, and if we do it too many times, they start to penalize us. So we try to avoid that. The other check on it is, as I said, is the legislative expenditure limitation. We can't spend any more than y'all let us spend, and the cash will accrue there, and then ultimately it gets taken in the ending balance. We end up with a huge ending balance, and it gets taken and pulled forward for use in the future by any of the legislature. So there in fact are checks on DAS collecting too much and hanging on to the money and having a party or something like that. So,
having a party would definitely be frowned upon.
Yeah.
Unless the committee is invited.
That at a pretty high level is sort of fundamentally what the price list is. I think the most important things to keep in mind about it is that it is prepared way out in advance, and that the sole purpose of it really is to provide the agencies, as they put together their request to the governor, some basis for estimating what their service charges, their DAS service charges, and some of these other state government service charges will be in the upcoming biennium. That it changes, the second important point I think is that it changes through the process. It changes at the governor's recommended point in the process. It changes at the legislatively adopted point in the process. And it can even change once the legislature has adopted a budget and we actually are executing the budget. It can even change then if we find that we've still overestimated the need for revenue and we're collecting too much revenue. It can change in the course of the biennium through a rate reduction to make sure that we don't accrue too much cash in the account, or we'll run into federal penalties.
Bill, what about going the other way? If you're into the biennium, the budgets have been set, the limitations have been set. All of a sudden, you think, for one reason or another, the costs have gone up because paper costs went up or whatever the case may be. Do you have flexibility to turn around and charge the agencies more?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in fact, those things do happen. Unanticipated increases in cost of supplies or unanticipated federal mandates that come down during the course of the budget execution process. those things will come along, and they can add to the cost of the base cost of providing the service. In those cases, we would normally come to the emergency board and request additional limitation. At that time, would also inform the emergency board that there was a fee or an assessment increase that was associated with that additional limitation and why we were asking for it. In my experience, which admittedly is not long-term at DAS, I think I've been at DAS almost, well, not quite 2 years now, but in my experience there, we've never had a case where we actually had to raise rates above those that were anticipated by the agencies in the price list. I wouldn't swear that it hasn't happened in history, but it hasn't in my experience.
Okay. Well, like in the late 70s, for example, when, you know, inflation was going out of sight, almost daily costs were going up, so that would be in a time maybe where, and I mean, I don't know if it was or not. Thanks for the overview, Bill. I have a couple of questions, and I'm going to just kind of start at the beginning of the document and sort of work my way through. And like I said, members, if you have questions, please, you know, jump in and ask. In the foreword. So I'm really going back to the beginning. Says price list chart at the very bottom. It says price list charges and user fees are subject to change as the budget requests of DAS and other contributing agencies are changed in development of the governor's recommended budget in the legislative approval process. What does that mean?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the translation of that is, as I said earlier, the price list is published before the agencies prepare their request.
Right.
And they use that, it actually becomes part of the budget instructions to the agencies. And they'll develop their request based on this price list. At the point the budgets are reviewed for the governor's recommended budget, for example, the governor may decide that this policy option package that DAS proposed in policy option package A as proposed in our agency request budget, the governor may opt to not include in his budget. So that will have an effect on the prices in the price list, usually a downward effect. Further on in the process, if the legislative ways and means process, the legislature says, well, you know, the governor's budget has this policy option package in it, and we don't want to fund that. So that comes out. That, again, affects the prices in the price list, so they shift. Most normally, they shift in a downward direction through that process, and that it stands to reason in that if you kind of think about it, that at the very beginning in the agency request, agencies are really putting in what they need or what they believe they need, including their not only their base operating but their initiatives as well in the very front end of this thing. And so that starts out about this big. And then the governor takes a look at it and sets his priorities. It overlays his priorities on those requests. And it gets down to about this big. And then the legislature reviews the governor's budget, makes adjustments according to the legislature's priorities, and it gets down to about this big. So that's the translation of that paragraph, I would
say. Okay. Okay. Well, that's what I was curious, because what it sort of sounds like is the ability to just sort of, you know, move the numbers around based on just, well, cause, you know. and I would hate to see that happen, because one of the complaints that we've heard from some of the agencies is before they get a chance to really set their budget, there's some figures that are already basically set for them, you know, and it's contained in this document. So, and especially as you looked at the centrally assessed services and that sort of thing. So, for example, I mentioned the Department of Human Services, and it was $381,000 or something. As DHS is setting up their budget, they say, well, okay, right off the top, your centrally assessed services, $381,000. So we know we've got to spend those dollars there. So that's why I was asking about that. During the course of the biennium, because I noticed at the top of the forward it says the price list of goods and services for 2005-2007 provides a detailed description, so on and so forth. So this is the document that, that the agencies used for 2005, 2007 to determine what their rates and fee for service and that sort of thing were going, and then they started building their budgets around that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the agencies use the price list to build their agency request that they submit to the governor.
So now, during the course of the biennium, either between the time this was prepared and handed out to the agencies to the time the legislature shows up and starts looking at everything, or during the course of the 2005-2007 the 05-07 biennium, is this document likely to change in terms of the in terms of the amounts that are in there, and then the agencies are notified somehow by they get a new price list or they get something that highlights for them, you know, what some of the changes have been?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the document itself does not change.
Okay.
The numbers in it, the effect of all the actions that you described, Mr. Chair, do change the numbers in it. We don't publish a second price list or a third price list, which I hear you asking is, do we,
right,
once everything is all settled, do we send out something new to them saying, here it is? We don't do that. That has occasionally, sort of at the first billing after the legislative adopted budget, occasionally we will, you know, an agency will get its billing from DAS, and we'll get a call and say, wow, this is less than what we expected, which is usually the case. This is less than what we expected. Does that mean that we're going to have, you know, more money in our budget? And, well, the answer to that is no, because when the legislature adjusts the DAS rates and assessments through the process, LFO, on the other hand, is making those same adjustments out in the agency budgets so that they match up with the DAS price list. So it hasn't been a significant problem. Usually, you know, it's a few phone calls, and it's usually right after the first assessment bill goes out. And folks say, gee, this is less than what I expected.
Okay. Are they then billed on a monthly basis, or are they billed so that they're working with cash flow, or is it an annualized basis or a biannual? Or do they just, you know, once the money comes in, you know, September or October, whenever it is, they, you know, they are sent a bill and the money is in for the biennium is sent to you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it varies by assessment. The fees are typically are billed monthly. The assessments vary based on the assessment, and we also do make arrangements for usually it's smaller agencies or boards and commissions to pay on a different schedule to be more sensitive to their cash flow situation. I guess that the point I guess I would make is that they do know what their billing schedule is up front. It doesn't move that schedule doesn't move around on them, but it varies from assessment to assessment.
But it, yeah, and it'll vary. For example, health licensing office, because of their cash flow, depending on when people renew their licenses and that sort of thing, or maybe TSPC, which are all fee funded services. Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, you know, is funded by teachers that are licensed, paying their fees, and that's and I believe TSPC is wholly funded that way. I don't think they get any general fund monies, and I know Health Licensing Office is the same way. Happen to be particularly sensitive to those two because those are the two that I deal with in my professional life. So,
pardon me, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we will, and those are a couple of very good examples. You know, for smaller agencies like that, an assessment that might be billed to larger agencies once a year or once every 6 months might be billed to those agencies quarterly in recognition of their cash flow situation.
Okay. Okay, great. Who sets, so for example, in the beginning of the document, we have, under Section 1, we have, you know, like the Oregon Corrections Enterprises, and then we have the, you know, the furniture that they make and mailroom and the services that they provide. Do you work with them to set their prices, or do they pretty much independently set their prices and then report to you what they're going to be? Now, in these particular instances, I don't know if you've noticed or not, members, but there's not a, you have to call for pricing. So I'm just curious as to how that's set up, because without a kind of a published price, which I can understand when it's going to be based on volume, and it's going to, you know, there's other things that it's going to be based on, so.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, non-DAS agencies generally set their own rates and report those to us to be included in the price list. A couple of those, like Oregon Correctional Industries, where you call for prices, many times there it's, I wouldn't call it custom work, but it's unique to the individual customer, so it's real difficult to set a price on some of the goods or services that they sell, unless it's more on a bid basis. So.
Okay. One of the things that I know has kind of come under a little bit of fire, kind of staying on this for just a second, has been, for example, the call centers that are operated at the Coffee Creek facility in Wilsonville, and previously was at the women's prison here in Salem before it moved to Wilsonville. And of course, the issue there is the sensitivity of the records and that sort of thing. But setting all of that aside, so if I'm DMV and I'm calling and I say, okay, I need a call center, I guess there's really two issues here. One is, am I obliged? I'm the DMV director. Am I obliged to buy that service from Oregon Corrections Industries, or can I say, I'm going to get a bid from Oregon Correction Industries, but I'm also going to go get a bid from Nextel or Wachovia, because Wachovia's got a big call center here in Salem, and it's just been built in the last couple of years. I'm going to go to or maybe I'm going to go to, you know, OCI and Nextel and Wachovia and Sprint, because they've got a big facility over in LeGrand, I think. LeGrand or somewhere in the east. Anyway, so I'm going to can I do that, or am I obliged to just utilize the Oregon Correction Industries?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a yes and a no.
Maybe.
Yeah, it means maybe. In some cases, you will have a choice of vendors that that are available on a master price agreement, and you can go to a choice of vendors. In some cases, you may in fact be able to get a number of bids on the service, and then there are other cases where you have no choice. The state agency, I can only speaking for DAS with any knowledge at all, that we're we are the sole provider of the service, and so you really don't have the option to go anyplace else. And whether DAS is the sole provider or is not the sole provider has a long, usually legislative history behind it of policy debates about whether this is a service that agencies should be able to go someplace else and buy if they can buy it cheaper. Generally speaking, I think that our rates, when we have compared our rates to private sector, the rates that we charge agencies are generally either in line or competitive. But in some cases, they're not. And there has been legislative discussion about those services. And the decision has been made for one reason, one public policy reason or another, that these are services that the state should retain to itself, even though it may cost more to do it that way.
But you didn't really, and maybe it's because you can't answer. Well, I guess it would be, is there a DAS rule? And let me go back to my example of the call center. So I'm DMV, and I need a call center set up. And I can go to... Am I obliged to go to Oregon Correctional Institution? Or Industries?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't know. I can't answer that question right now.
If they have a contract in place, and then they're...
then there's not a problem.
But once that contract has run its course...
I can get that.
There's not a DAS rule then that says that DMV must, or that any agency seeking call center services must go to the Oregon Correctional Institute.
There's not one, Mr. Chair. There's not one that I'm aware of, but I'll be happy to research that and get back to you on it.
Okay. That brings up the next one, which is the Department of Justice, and you know they kind of have a little bit of a corner on the business there, and I see that, for example, from 03 to 05, the AG now they're not raising the rates for any of the other support stuff for an investigator, paralegal, law clerk, or clerical work, but they are raising the rates for their lawyers, and it's a 20% raise from $98 to $119, which seems a little bit steep since the CPI over the last 2 years has not gone up that much. As an agency, either because of statutory requirements or DAS rule requirements, am I required to use the Attorney General's office for my legal services, or can I go outside? Could I go down? Could I go and retain the services? You know, I'm TSPC. Could I go and retain the services of Gun and Gun, for example?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in that particular case, I believe that you are obligated by statute to use the Attorney General's office, unless the Attorney General releases you to do otherwise. And generally, my experience is that in that case, the Attorney General has to deputize outside counsel to represent you.
Okay. And I think, was it here in committee or was it on the floor that we did have a bill dealing with this issue and allowing the AG's office to let's see, kind of moving on. Any questions so far from? I don't mean to be sort of hogging the so with regards to payroll services. And that's a function from the director's office, correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, payroll services are a function of the State Controller's Division, which is a division of the Department of Administrative Services.
Right. And the State Controller is from the is part of the director's office, correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the State Controller's Division is actually a separate freestanding division, operating division of DAS. It's under the control of the director's office, but not part of the director's office.
Gotcha. Okay. So most of the agencies, or all of the agencies, are using the payroll services from DAS. Is that correct? So that's set on an assessment. Is that? Did I read that correct?
Mr. Chair, could you tell me what page you're on?
E8.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that the payroll charges from the State Controller's Division are billed to agencies on a per transaction.
Okay.
That's the best way I would describe it, per transaction, per check basis.
Okay. And then, of course, as it says here, there's two things that are not in that assessment. One is the unemployment expenses, and the other is the mass transit tax. But I do have a question about the mass transit tax, because it says that multiply the general fund and other fund salaries and wages paid for employees at workstations within the boundaries of a transit district by 0.006 for all districts. But the interesting thing is that TriMet, for example, so any of our agencies that are in the Portland metro area and within the boundaries of TriMet, TriMet's rate is not 0.006. It is 0.0615 or 0.0612, and they were given in the last legislative session, they were given legislative authority to go to as high as 0.007, I believe, and I think they may have already gone ahead and bumped up there. So do we get like a special rate?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would have to research the TriMet situation for you. I couldn't speak to it off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I can do that.
Because one of the things that I wouldn't want to do is have an agency get caught in, you know, I mean, if you're only spending a few thousand dollars a month on your payroll, that's one thing. But if you're spending a few million dollars a month on your payroll, DHS maybe, DMV, you know, some of the others within the boundaries, that difference can all of a sudden become pretty big. Because all of a sudden you're talking, on a million dollars, 0.006 versus 0.007, you're talking about $100,000. Would that be right? $100,000 difference?
I believe that's right.
So that's or is it $10,000? Maybe it's not as bad.
I don't have my handheld calculator with me.
Mass transit tax doesn't just apply in the metro area, though. It's anywhere there's a transit district.
Right.
Yeah.
And so...
Eugene.
Right, so you have Salem, Eugene, Corvallis.
Okay.
Corvallis has a district. Wilsonville has its own district now. And actually, there's been a few that have seceded from TriMet. For example, is it Estacada and Malala? And Canby have all seceded. Now, I don't know if we have state offices there, but that would come into play. But what about over on the coast, Representative Brown?
Well, I think that the mass transit districts can be chartered under two different statutes, and if they're under the right statute, they participate in these funds from the state and the payroll tax to subsidize some of their operations within the district. And I think the one in Lincoln County does now.
Okay.
And I don't know about the others. It depends on how they're chartered.
Okay. But I just, what I want to make sure of, again, is that we're not, and maybe TriMet does give the state a special rate just because of this kind of budgeting that has to occur. I don't know.
I'll be happy to take a look at that and get back to you on it.
Thank you. Let's see. got that. Going over. The Archives Division, and my question with regards to this is that if we look at Office of Secretary of State Archives Division, and it gives a nice little description here, and kind of the services that are charged, and the record center and that sort of thing, and then it shows, and they're charged on a per cubic foot basis, and I believe it's is the rate on a per cubic foot basis, and then we have the agencies listed out and the amount of space that they occupy and the charge. So, for example, again, using DHS as an example, they occupy 14,335 cubic feet. excuse me, and they're charged $173,744, which I assume, and I did a little bit of the math myself last night, that is 14,335 times 0.5050 times 2, because this is a biennial charge. I'm assuming that that's correct. But my question is really around this, is that if you then go back a little bit further and we go back to the central government services charge, and we've got the archives division charges here from the Secretary of State's office, but then you go back to central services, and of course one of the things that I had mentioned earlier was 100% of the expenditures of the Secretary of State's archives division. And then we have for example, going back to Department of Human Resources or Human Services, and it's $381,000. Is that on top of the $173,000, or does that include the $173,000? Because, you know, obviously, if it's on top of it, then the charge is going to be 173 plus 381 is going to be 600 and what, 35 or something thousand dollars, or right in that ballpark, or right in that ballpark. So I'm just curious as to how that's figured, because I guess my concern is we don't have agencies being charged twice for the same service.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe those are separate charges.
So why would, if they're separate charges, then the question comes up, then why would DAS be charging $381,000 to DHS for 100% of this, you know, as part, I mean, for all of these expenditures? I mean, I assume that $381,000 is for their share of legislative expenses, legislative council, governor's office, and then archives. But they've already been charged archives back here by the Secretary of State's office. So what? Can you help me understand that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can give you two answers to that. The first one is
that Bill, you've given me a lot of two answers to a lot of things.
I believe the reason they are charged separately is because central government service charges are not federally reimbursable. However, storage charges are. And in fact, that's one of the reasons central government service charges are held separately and are reimbursed the following biennium. I'll research that and be sure about my answer on this for you. But I believe that it's the difference between the storage charge function of the Archives Division and the central administration function of it, being the two separate, one falling into the central government service charges, the other one being federally reimbursable and being assessed outside of the central government service charges. But if you would, let me research that and be sure that I'm correct about that.
I really wish you would, and then get back to us on it, because I am concerned about our agencies being charged twice for the same thing, and because within if you read the three paragraphs regarding the Archives Division, it talks about the Archives Records Division is providing essential, secure, and properly managed storage and retrieval facility for inactive, non-permanent state records. And then it talks about the archives that approximately 50% of the occupied space was out of general fund agencies. No problem there. The Archives Division developed the budget and allowing for rent, utilities, office supplies, janitorial services, and three positions that perform records maintenance tasks. So this 0.5050 per cubic foot appears to be a really a very complete charge from a standpoint that the customer is buying or renting the space to store their records, and for people to go in and dust them and clean, you know, the cleaning, and for supplies for archives to be able to operate and do the things that they need to do, and then for the personnel to as far as the maintenance is concerned, which is going to include retrieval, is what I would think anyway. And so if it's, and if that's the case, then we have, another charge back here that DAS is charging that actually is more than what Secretary of State's archives is charging. But it's, but then the question becomes, well, but what does DAS do? Relative to that expense. So I think those are some questions that really come up, and I want to make sure, like I said, that agencies aren't being, because when you get down to the bottom line here, on the Secretary of State's side, you've got a total of $830,000 that's going to support the archives division from the agencies, and then when you go back to page E23, which is where we get to the end of the central government service charge, you've got $6,742,000. So you've got, I mean, that's there's a lot of money involved there, and I just want to make sure that we're.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to be clear, in central government service charges, the $6.7 million number supports all of these functions that are listed over here on page E22, mm-hmm. Not just the Secretary of State's Archives Division that are supported by those.
Okay. Well, I understand that. I understand it's for the assembly, the council. The governor's office council, I am assuming, because the legislative council writes the agency bills, legislation bills, legislative assembly, because all the agencies need to get stuff passed, so they got to contribute to our kitty, and in the governor's office because the governor has to oversee them, I guess. So anyway, the one that really popped out at me was that archives division, and it's because of the charges that are already being charged by archives. That's real, and I recognize that of that $6 million, not all of it's going to archive. I do recognize that.
We'll get back to you on that, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Rosenbaum.
It looks to me like that maybe they have made a change in the way they're apportioning the cost for storage. Because when I'm reading the narrative up above, it says that while the Record Center is operated by a central agency, the Archives Division determined that approximately 50% of the occupied space, I'm on page E9,
yes.
Was that of primarily generally funded agencies. Therefore, the charge was developed to more equitably spread the funding across all fund types. And if you look at the breakouts, there are entities that aren't paying that centrally assessed, whatever it's called, government charge. Like, the one that jumps out at me is the State Accident Insurance Fund, which must purchase some storage space from archives because they're paying $14,000 a year. So I think maybe what's happened is that they've decided to take the other 50% that's not general fund agencies and bill, on a per cubic foot basis for what space is being occupied by these other entities. Which does make some sense, because
sure.
They're in there taking up space.
Absolutely.
Presumably they could store somewhere else if they thought they could get a better deal. But
Right. Well, and then that does bring up that question. Can they, is that something that they can go and build storage down the road now has document storage. Can they go there and buy their storage services there? I mean, granted, the State Archives Division, we took a little tour. I went on a tour the other day with the Secretary of State, and it was very impressive from the standpoint of how the steps that they take to make sure that they preserve all of the documents and that sort of thing. And they had, one of their challenges is with the tapes, for example, the cassette tapes that we produce, that we're doing here right now is being taped. And storing that over a long period of time, and how that's going to and because they do degrade over time, but they do have CA not compressed air controlled atmospheric conditions in the archives building, which is of course part of the need for being able to store documents. But if you can look into that bill a little bit, I certainly appreciate it. as we move on, then one of the big questions that I had, Bill, is there's a section in here on page E24, which is for minority women and emerging small businesses, and this, it says this charge pays administration of Department of Consumer and Business Services certification of minority women and emerging small businesses and the governor's advocate operations for policy and outreach efforts. The assessment is based on non-federal full-time equivalent position authority of all state agencies, and the allocation formula to state agencies is unchanged from 0305, but it doesn't go into detail as far as what the allocation formula is. But I'm wondering, why is it that all of our agencies, because it's a pretty good list there, but all of our agencies are being charged for the services of DCBS in relative to minority women and emerging small businesses? I'm perplexed by that. I don't understand why that would be a...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I understand correctly, the charge is assessed to the agencies because it is a cost center in Department of Consumer and Business Affairs, and as well as the governor's advocate office, which I think is two positions. And so those costs have to be covered by, it is a function that serves all state agencies through the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs, or Services, pardon me. And so it's assessed to the state agencies. So.
But I don't understand, what does the Aviation Department or the Department of Human Services or the Criminal Justice Commission have to do with whether a business is a minority women or emerging small business?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can't speak to specifically some of these. Having worked in the Department of Human Services, I can say that Department of Human Services, of course, serves a quite a diverse population of clientele, and frequently contracts for some of those services, and services of minority women and emerging small businesses are an assistance in getting firms that are owned by women, minorities, into the competition for those contracts. So it's a service that is provided out of one agency, but its effect hits a number of agencies and the interests of a number of agencies, for example, in their contracting process. I couldn't speak to aviation per se, but that's something out of my own experience that I could offer as an example.
Well, maybe I misunderstand the issue of minority women and emerging small businesses, because I know on all of our state RFPs and that sort of thing, there's always a disclaimer for the business to state whether they've got a certification as a minority women-owned or minority-owned, women-owned, or emerging small business, and that they fit that category. And I believe the same category that the state uses is the same sort of definitions that the federal government uses. So that if you qualify for the feds, you qualify for the state. So you have Dingfelder Consulting Services, and it's owned by a woman, and I don't know if that's really the name of your business or not, representative. I'm sort of using an example here, if you'll forgive me. And so it's owned by a woman, and she meets that qualification, let's say, that certification qualification, and so she's going to do an RFP to look at the number of leaves on the tree out here. And she's doing a study that's state-funded, and so she checks that she's got that certification. I don't understand why that's an assessment to the Department of, to the Office of the Governor, or to the Division of State Lands, or to Legislative Fiscal Office, or to the Secretary of State. I'm having a hard time understanding why this, I realize that this is a certification process that DCBS sort of looks at, and they provide the little piece of paper that Dingfelder Consulting may have hanging in their office that says that they're certified by the state of Oregon as a woman-owned.
Mr. Chair?
Anyway.
What they do at the state level, but I can say I have worked with WBMV certification process more at the city level. Hmm. And one of the things I'm just wondering here, if there's a fee, and I don't know who can answer this at DAS, but is there a fee assessed based on the number of contracts that you put out? Because the way I read this, part of this assessment is for outreach efforts. And I have worked a lot with the city, the port, TriMet, on their outreach efforts. I haven't worked as much with the state. I've talked to ODOT about it, because when we were doing the OTIA project, one of the questions I had for ODOT was how they were reaching out to MBE and WB firms. So I don't know if, to me, when I look at $62, all I can think about is that maybe an assessment is being levied based on the percentage of contracts that these agencies put out, because somebody, and I'm assuming DAS, is doing some type of outreach overall and assistance with WB and BE firms. That's just a guess, but that would be based on my experience.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, there's an outreach function of MWESB, but I think I'm really ill prepared to speak to their program. I don't work with their program.
Maybe we should get them in, but that would be my guess.
Probably, and sort of the difficulty that I'm having in responding to the chair is that I'm not an expert in their area, and the answer probably demands more expertise than I have.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and I guess I'm just trying to figure out why that, because there's $750,000.
We need to have this person from DCBS that says, if you have questions about this assessment method, and that would be my guess, because I can't imagine what for $62, that's probably not even, it's barely an hour of somebody's time. So I think they're probably doing some type of formulaic breakdown, saying we're doing outreach, and then based on the number of contracts or contractors that they have working on these projects. I don't know. I'd be curious. Maybe we can get Kerry Thompson here to speak about that. That's the person listening.
I did write a note to that effect to call her and see if we can answer that. Because I'm, kind of looking at that, and I'm not sure that it makes, well, obviously it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, it may make perfect sense to, you, for example,
that's just my guess.
And the point that you're making is a good point on the outreach efforts and that sort of thing. And maybe it is based on that. But anyway, we'll follow up on that. Let's see, the library assessment and the Oregon State Law Library. These are all assessments that are based on. These are services that are provided by these various agencies that you had talked about earlier, but they're billed by DAS. And so DAS collects the money and then passes it on to that particular agency. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And most of these are based on their FTE, and so it's basically a headcount.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Most of the assessments are based on FTE.
Okay. I want to go back a little bit to some of the, as we kind of go back a little further in the document, beginning on, well, let's see if I can find it here. I guess I should have. Just a second. I think it's in like section 3 or something. Yeah. It is. I apologize, members. Starting on page E34, and then there's assessments, for example, for the director's office and budget management and state controllers and that sort of thing. And I didn't get quite as through that as I wanted to. But one of the things that I noticed is that we have starting on page E46, kind of this big spreadsheet here. that are the DAS service charges. And it has a total, it's got the agency number, which if we go back to some of the other documents, we can see what the agency, so for example, agency number 10,000 is Department of Human Services. And I'll just keep using them as my example. And it shows $19,126,000 is the total for 0507. Did the agency figure that out, or is that a DAS number that you based it on all of, so you've got quality assurance and e-government and human resources division, state controllers division, the budget management director's office. What's EPNP? I can't remember.
Enterprise policy and planning, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So you have all of, and these are basically the assessment charges that DHS, for example, has for these services. And whenever they call during the course of the biennium and are requesting something for one of these services, that service is going to be provided at no additional charge because it's already in the assessment. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in response to the first part of your question, these calculations are DAS calculated charges.
Okay.
They weren't calculated by human services, for example.
Okay.
The second part of it is that these are all assessments, and that's correct. Since that service is shared and available to those agencies. But I should say that in working with, in requesting this one of the services that's provided by, through one of the assessments that are listed here, it may result in some consultation or some decision on the part of the agency that they need to take some further action that could result in a fee per service charge from another unit of DAS that bills on fee for service. But in terms of the services that are provided by these assessment functions, you're correct.
Okay. And these charges are based generally on, and if we go back to the narrative a little bit, so for example, the enterprise planning and policy, if we read that, that's based on a headcount, correct? Am I right in that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's the basis for the assessment. I would just point out that this is one of those assessments where we make a special adjustment for smaller boards and commissions, smaller agencies.
Okay.
If you allocate, for example, strictly on FTE or strictly on size of budget, disproportionately may hit a small board or commission, and so we'll make an adjustment to recognize that.
Okay. Now, it does raise another question. So, for example, going back to enterprise planning and policy, we've got the, for example, IT governance bodies such as the IRMD, Human Resources Management, excuse me, Information Resources Management, and then a variety of other things that are within that. But if we go back to the grid, we see that, for example, cybersecurity, which would be part of IT, IRMD, is a separate charge. Linus, which I think is part of IRMD, would be a separate charge. And some of the others, e-government, which is a part of IRMD. So again, you know, the question that I had earlier about double charging, we're not in a situation here where we're creating a double charge for on our agency.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in this case, I can say with great certainty that we are not double charging.
Okay.
The assessment for each of these programs is built from the bottom up on the cost basis, and then there's an additional overhead charge for IRMD administration, which is separate from any of these. So each of these stands on their own.
Okay. So each of them do stand on their own. Okay. All right. We have the facilities stuff. We've already spent quite a bit of time on that, members, and so I don't think we'll continue. I don't think we need to continue sort of beating that horse. And actually, next week we will see. We're going to have 2236. We'll have 2236 coming back before us on Tuesday with some amendments that Jim has circulated or is circulating. And it talks about the we've already talked a little bit about IRMD. Let me just ask, and in purchasing, we've talked quite a bit about procurement and purchasing, particularly last week that we talked quite a bit about purchasing and procurement and you know sort of how that's being assessed and who's doing what and what responsibilities the agencies have from a standpoint of going through the DAS process, and how that relates to the Smart Light program. And so we've talked quite a bit about that. So let me throw it open yet again and see if there are questions that the only thing we didn't talk about a lot yet this session, but I'm sure we will, and that's the DAS fleet from a standpoint of motor pools and kind of how that operates. But let me see if there's any questions that you all have.
I do have one question.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Thanks. This is jumping back to that central government service charge formula, which is on page E22. It looks like most of the ones that are based on FTEs are just overall FTEs, but this particular one says it's based on other funded FTEs, so it wouldn't be positions paid by the general fund, and then it says it excludes federally funded positions because I guess the feds have rules that prevent that their money being used to defray these other kinds of costs. So do you have any rationale, if you know, for why this was set up to be other funded positions? The thing I'm noticing and wondering about is that it seems like it would fall... I mean, it would be a disincentive for very small agencies to seek grant monies or some other source to fund positions if they're going to get dinged with this assessment as a result of that. Why would it be based on other funded positions rather than their general funded positions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I can't answer your question. That's a good question. But I'll be happy to look into that and get back to you. You're correct that with respect to the federally funded positions, the feds view these as core functions of government, and they don't participate in financing core functions of government at the state level. You're correct in that, and I'll get back to you on the second part of your question.
Okay.
I don't have any other questions, but I would like to find out about the WB assessment. I think that would be interesting. Maybe you can follow up, or we can follow up with the DCBS person.
I'm going to ask staff to give Carrie Thompson a call, and maybe we could invite her to come over and explain to us a little bit about how that works and why that is set up the way it is. I did just have one thing reminder that kind of popped into my brain, and I was looking for the sheets that I had on it, and I didn't bring them with me, but I do remember the scenario. We had a situation where a local government had, and I know that risk management is now returning some of the money to this particular agency, but it was a local government agency that was on a permanent assigned. They were renting a vehicle from. It was a police car. The car was a 1995, and about in 2003 or early 2004, the car was involved in a motor vehicle accident, and it was totaled. Then DAS let them know that they needed to then pay the replacement cost of the vehicle, which was $21,000, and their payments that they'd been making for the previous 8 years totaled up to about $27,000. So they, for a car that probably cost $22,000 or $25,000, a police car, they'd already paid, or so they ended up paying about almost $50,000 for this car. In the letter that went back, that has recently gone back to this agency, the director said basically that DAS has sort of changed their way of doing things, and that now the rates are prorated on a replacement cost basis, as opposed to, you know, you can rent the vehicle for however long you want to rent it, and then if the vehicle is damaged and that sort of thing, you pay full replacement cost. Which does not make would never have made much sense. So I guess the question that I have, Bill, is how is and maybe it's too early to tell, but basing, you know, going on a prorated basis for future replacement costs of vehicles, how's that seem to be working?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I couldn't tell you about that. I really don't have the information right at hand. I can talk with David Hartwig, who's the administrator of the State Services Division, and sort of get you an assessment of how things are going.
That would be good. Like I said, I can't believe that. You know, it seems to me that on a you know, on a fleet sort of a basis, when you're looking at these, that you, anytime you're getting a rent, you're putting a certain amount of money from your rent each month or year or whatever back, so that when the vehicle does need to be replaced, the money's there to replace it. Of course, that should be shown in the budget as being a replacement fund, so that everybody understands, including us, the legislature understands that's not something to go and grab. But if you could check with David, that would be good.
I certainly
would appreciate that. Okay, great, thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, well, Bill, thank you very much.
Thank you
for your meeting, and appreciate you coming and talking about this with us today. With that, I'm going to close the informational hearing, and we don't have anything else, so we'll stand adjourned.